Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Wandering Road Podcast. I'm your host Chris, alongside my co-host Dean, and joining us for today's show, we're welcoming JJ from Southern Demonology again. I've gotten great feedback from some listeners about your episodes. They love to hear you, man. So today, guys, we're going to be talking about Japanese folklore, Japanese spirits, and demons, and this is a fun one that I'm really looking forward to. But before we get started with today's show, if you would like to share your stories with us or would like to be a guest on the show to share your paranormal experiences, please feel free to email us at twroadpodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to have you on the show as a guest. Or if you're a little shy on appearing on a show, just send us your story and we'll make an episode dedicated to your stories. And again, the email address is twroadpodcast@gmail.com. So let's jump right into it, guys. We'll skip all the formalities of how we're all doing because we know we're all fucking tired. It's been a long day. Well, except for you, Dean. It's still daylight for you over in Hawaii. But I'm going to start with you, JJ. With regards to Japan and spirituality and the belief in the paranormal and whatnot, I saw a stat that said that, what was it, like at least 90% of Japanese people believe in some sort of spirits, or what's the Japanese word for it? Ire?
Ire. Yes, it is. It is much more rare to find someone who does not, at an instinctual level, believe in ghosts. Monsters, not nearly as much, but everyone still knows all of the tales around them. So, Ire, very much the case. In fact, constantly there are being new legions of Ire and Bakemono being added into the rosters. When I was in Tokyo last year, I was watching a Japanese talk show, and they were going over a couple of these new legends, one of which was, what, Hyako Hyako? Which guy was at his computer just typing away, and he hears Hyako Hyako. And that's the onomatopoeia for someone jumping up and down. And he's on the third floor, and he looks, and he sees a head just appearing above his balcony. And sure enough, it was a spirit that could stretch its torso up several flights of in a building and then, you know, be able to peer in at people. And then another one, which was the oddest one I've ever heard of, was a motorcycle riding samurai armor clad undead thing that wielded a katana and was terrorizing people in the heart of a city, which I'm like, okay, sure. If that's what you want to go with, whatever.
Damn Yakuza, getting into all kinds of people's trouble. I have to wonder, like, these more modern stories, whether or not they are, I mean, I think as we get further down the pike in technology and stuff and people just assimilating more into different cultures, I feel like we're going to see these stories pop up more and more, these new stories. And I think it just seems like less likely that things that people actually spread around are genuine, but at the same time, they sound extremely creative. Cause as soon as you said the motorcycle riding thing, I just immediately think of like something like Daredevil or you know, like some superhero or whatever, like anti-hero. So I don't know.
Accurate description.
Yeah. I feel like that one with the motorcycle is probably harder to, I mean, oh, actually I would say it would be easier to prove that that was false because everyone and their mother would see something like that riding down the street. But the Yako Yako, that sounds pretty creepy. That sounds like a really great horror story. I like that one.
I mean, just like in the U.S. with the idiotic black-eyed children, there are copious amounts of creepypasta floating around Japan. It is a country that, besides the most remote of villages, is completely wired and connected via the internet. So everyone has, you know, Keitai, mobile phones, Smaho, whatever you want to call them, and they're always on their devices. So things get constantly pumped out and everything else on a continual basis. Another thing is that, you know, in addition to just believing in spirits, there are precautions that people love to take. For example, you do not walk next to a graveyard, ever. Or if you do, you make sure to bring to have plenty of salt at home so that you can then place at the doorways in order to keep out unattached spirits from following you back.
Yeah, that's something I noticed when I was traveling through Japan. I did walk past some graveyards and I did immediately think about the stories you told us in the past. And I actually have some creepy stories to share myself, which I will at some point. I'll save the best one for last, which, you know, Chris just did some research for me, like I said earlier before we got on. And the way he searched for it was different how I searched for it and came up with much creepier stuff relating to my experience, but we'll save that for later. But I did notice walking around that a lot of shops, especially like in the old city of Kobe, a lot of shops and a lot of little homes or apartments or whatever, they had these very intricately placed and well-designed salt piles. And I guess they like make them and sell them like that. They look like cone shape, or like they're kind of like a pyramid shape of salt. And I didn't know what it was at first, but I just thought that that was so interesting that they actually have a whole industry, or like a little sub industry of people who create these little salt piles to keep evil spirits away.
There's an entire segment of the Japanese real estate market, which if you ever run across a property, which the price just seems too good to be true, it's because it is. And normally these are the places in which people have been murdered, or people have just abandoned the apartment after a few nights or a month or two, and the place has a history of that. And so they will try to knock the price down as low as humanly possible to still attract renters in order to get into it. And it's always a bad spot when you walk into a joint and you see talismans in the wall or hidden in closets, because those talismans are no joke. They, you know, in Japan, there are Shinto exorcists, and they do not come cheap. They will charge an arm and a leg for their services, and that's because they're usually very well worth it.
When I was in Kobe, I'll probably bring up Kobe a lot because it was the oldest and most historically rich area that I traveled to. But we stayed in an onsen that I did not expect it to be that old. Like, I knew it was old and I knew it was probably pretty well worn from over the years. But I assumed by, you know, 20, I'd have to look that up. I'm pretty sure it was like at least 100 years old, at least. I know Kobe itself is, you know, there are parts of Kobe that date back to, I think, the 1400s. But when we walked around the location, like the area that we were in, it was pretty remote. There wasn't a lot to do in the city or the town. And there were some, you know, good shops and restaurants. And there's this area where a lot of the tourists were walking through the little shop areas and whatnot, little street. But if you climbed all the way to the top of the hill, there was this really old shrine that was, I think it's Inari, the Inari shrine, where it's like they celebrate the Nari dog, or like, it's like a wolf, or a fox slash dog shrine. And it was very beautiful. And apparently I saw the caretaker up there. I didn't talk to him, but apparently I did research, and apparently that caretaker was like the 19th generational caretaker of that shrine area, which blew my mind. It was really beautiful up there, but I just got like this weird like feeling when I was up there. It was different than any other, you know, being around other shrines before that, or like walking past a graveyard. That area up there, for some reason, to me felt very strange. And I actually stupidly, I know this is a no-no, JJ, I decided to take pictures and videos of the area up there, and I caught a lot of the shrines in my shot. And I couldn't help but think at the time, like, oh, is this a good idea or not? Probably not. I don't know. We'll see. They're still on my camera, so if my camera melts or explodes, or I open it up later and something happens, we'll know. But that night, back in the onsen, which was really old and in itself creepy because the room was very old And there were some awesome things about it too. I'll talk about it in a sec, but it was relatively creepy and old, and my wife was fine with it. She loved it, but I was like a little unsettled. And that night I had like a really weird stress dream. And in the stress dream, I don't really remember the details as much, but I remember like the dream itself showed me like an outcome with my family, that if I had chosen something, it would be bad for my family. I think it was a good dream in a sense that it was showing me things that, you know, I maybe shouldn't, like the road I shouldn't travel down or things I shouldn't do in order for good things to happen. So it wasn't like a, you know, a demon or something saying like, oh, I'm going to screw you over. It was more like a warning, I would say. So that was kind of a good semi-supernatural experience. But one thing I wanted to talk about, since you know, we talked about this before, I don't know your depth of knowledge on it, but it was really interesting to me. So there are these giant spiders everywhere called Joro spiders. And they're very colorful. I'm not afraid of spiders, so I found them very beautiful. But they're like the size of a two-year-old's hand. They're massive, like little tiny eyes and stuff you can see very clearly, but the body's really huge. And apparently Japan has this story about the Joro spider, the Joro woman spider or something like that. I apologize. I don't know the Japanese name. But the story goes that she actually hunts and preys on men. And she'll like come to them in their dreams, and like very beautiful woman, and like lure them and kind of entrance them. And then she turns back into a giant spider and then devours them or sucks the blood out of them or whatever. But then the creepiest part of all is that she keeps them. Apparently she keeps them in like an abandoned house somewhere. And that's why I brought up the story, because you were talking about this whole culture of like really old antiquated houses that just don't seem to have been touched in like decades. And the crazy thing is, I heard that story, or I read that story in Kobe, and in Kobe around the city, there were like at least five or six homes that I counted walking around that looked completely abandoned. Like the grass was overgrown. There was like mail sticking out of the box. Like who knows how long that's been in there. And then my wife and I were talking, we're thinking like, imagine if you were an old person living here and no one thought to check on you. There could be like dead bodies right now in some of these homes, because like no one's gotten the mail in like however long. And the weirdest thing about it is they don't look like they could be completely abandoned, because they're not boarded up. But at the same time, you could tell there's something off about them. And I can't help but that pops into my head, that story about what you're just saying about how like, you know, talismans and this whole belief that properties can be haunted and people won't touch them.
Yeah. So that story is the Kuma Ona is what she's called, literally Spider Woman.
Okay.
And there's such a rich tradition of animals turning into human women, sometimes for positive things, sometimes for absolutely negative. And she is definitely one of the most common. In fact, there's a horror movie made in the 90s. Where there were all of these sightings of a spider woman along a particular stretch of highway. And they sent like a paranormal investigator, a more journalist out to cover what was going on. And turns out that he finds her, and he's sitting in this woman's apartment who happens to be the Spider Woman, and then she attempts to murder him right then and there. Now, it's kind of a famous, like low budget movie, but it was pretty good though. Oh, but the reason why you'll find a lot of abandoned property, for two reasons. The first is that due to Japanese tax structure, it is cheaper to have a house on a property and not use it than it would be to raise the property, because then it's considered quote unquote usable land and the tax goes way, way up. But the second factor is that after the stock market crash, late 80s, early 90s, something like that, they call that time the lost generation, because property was through the absolute roof. And after the crash, the Nikkei is still never recovered, and people lost everything. And now a lot of Japanese people refuse to buy houses because they are petrified of losing their savings. And I mean, the Japanese, and I think this applies to a lot of Asian cultures, strongly believe in savings. In fact, most women who will control the household budget and give their husbands a stipend or allowance per month so that they can like buy beer or do whatever it is, they will often have himitsu savings, secret savings, in which no one knows but them, and that way they can save for it and try to do something with. But yeah, it's a really kind of sad situation.
So JJ, crazy. You lived in and worked in Japan for a little while, and you visit there almost yearly.
Yep.
So in your conversations with folks in Japan, does spirits and spirituality, is it like a popular topic of conversation, or is it taboo type of subject that people try to avoid?
It's not taboo. If you're talking about Yurei or Bakemono monsters, people are more willing to talk about that. However, unless you are a priest or a shrine maiden, you won't find too much enthusiasm for religion in general amongst the Japanese. You will go, so like most major life events are Buddhist rites. So when it comes to funerals, weddings, etc., those are all Buddhist. When it comes to yearly activities such as shrine visits, those are typically Shinto-based. And those two religions coexist extremely well together. There's very little conflict there. But yeah, you won't really find too much enthusiasm for the religion itself, although visiting shrines and participating in these rites are just a way of life.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I don't know about you guys, but I was a huge fan, and I'm still a huge fan of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And back in like 1995, they came out with the third movie that was god awful. But if you watch it now as an adult, it's probably not that bad. But the only reason I bring this up is because throughout the movie, they called them Kappa. And I had no idea what that was. So for this show, I went and looked up Japanese creatures and whatnot. And lo and behold, Kappa was listed. And when you look up a picture of a Kappa, it kind of looks like a like decrepit version of a Ninja Turtle. So I always thought that was funny.
Yeah, so they are water spirits that have webbed fingers and toes, green skin, a turtle shell on their back, a beaked mouth, and their most classic feature is a ring of seaweed or hair shaped like a star on top of their head, in the very top, in that part that's above that is completely bald. And they are sometimes depicted as friendly. There have been horror shows and movies that have depicted them as being man-eaters, but normally they're the more benign of things, and you'll see statues of them around there. It's one of the more famous Bakemono that you'll find.
Yeah, when I was in Kobe, I actually saw a statue of one of those, and you just answered my question that I had, because I was under the impression that they were treated as like evil deities or something bad like that. So I always thought, like, why would you have a statue of something evil in your town? Be like us, like creating like the statue of a demon or something and just put it. But then you answered the question. It was like, oh, some, you know, for the most part, they're benign. They're not as nefarious as a lot of other yurei in Japan.
Oh, yeah. And usually they're considered lucky as well. So that's why you see a lot of statues of them. Nice. Yeah, Kappa are always fun. My favorite, though, and I think I've mentioned this one before, is Kamikaze Obake. Obake meaning monster, and O in front of that is just an honorific. Kami is a word that means god, and then kasa is umbrella. Oh. They're called tsukimono, and they're objects that have existed for a very long time. They've been in constant use, and as a result, a little bit of psychic energy has rubbed off from their users and grants them sentience. And so you can get lanterns, you can get the paper walls, in which if there are holes in them, then eyes can develop in there. You get the umbrellas, and this thing is depicted as a huge umbrella where it used to have a thing that you would hold on to. That's become a leg. It has a huge tongue that hangs out, one eye, and yeah, it, in fact, if you ever wanted to see one in action, there's a movie on Shudder called Night of a Thousand Demons, and it was made back in the 50s or 60s in Japan, and it's really more of like a samurai story around the rich or oppressing the peasants, and anyway, but then the monsters kind of rise up because the rich people want to assume the village and tear down the shrine, and that pisses off the monsters that are guarding it. But anyway, the comic relief in the entire thing is Kamikaze Obake, and he goes around licking the rich lord's son, who's kind of slow in the head, and they go around causing mischief together. It is hilarious.
Oh my God. I thought you were going to bring up the butthole demon or something like that, which, by the way,
y'all seem to like that one so much. I will reserve that honor for you.
Okay. I have to mention to people, because when I came across it in my research, like, I just had to do a double take, and I'm like, what the fuck? I just imagine like some drunk Japanese guy, like 300 years ago, just walking around, and then some other drunk guy just like comes up to him like naked and just sticks his butt in his face, like, you know, just showing him his anus or something. And then the drunken guy, maybe he had a little bit of wormwood in him, and it's like mushrooms or something, and he saw an ain't it an eye. So in case you don't know, there's a spirit demon or whatever in Japan, where it's this creature that walks around on all fours. It has the torso and body of a man, but the anus has an eyeball, and it just kind of like turns around and spreads its cheeks and just shows you the eyeball. And I just, dude, like, what the fuck, man? Japan.
Anyway. Yeah, Dean ran into a few of them.
I saw more than I care to admit, and that was just me in the mirror. I'm just saying, had a little, one too many sakes.
Yeah, well, onsen, the onsen that you stayed with, it sounded like you stayed at a ryokan, which is an onsen plus a hotel. Yeah. Did you actually partake in like the public bathing?
We actually, for this trip, we dropped way more money than we should have, but it was like, we wanted to have the best experience. So we actually got a room that had a private onsen in it. It was like a really small, it wasn't huge. So we didn't do we didn't do the public bath, but we did get into the mud water onsen in the room a bunch of times, and it was such a great experience. But I digress. Did you have a story for the
public bath? You didn't want to run into that anus.
Yeah, I didn't want to.
No, I have never encountered the butthole anus monster, and I'm very happy to say that. But no, onsen are the Japanese take bathing to the ultimate leisure activity.
Yes.
And it is bloody amazing.
Agreed.
If you ever, I should have told you this before you went, if you would have ever gotten the chance, get a haircut and an onsen.
Okay.
Or get a haircut, period, in Japan. But an onsen, oh my gosh. It is, so I am bald. I'm bald as they come. And my wife and I both went in for a haircut. We were sitting beside each other. She was done in 20 minutes because they were just trimming up. You know, she has very long hair. They spent an hour on me. Wow. Doing everything under the sun, trimming the, you know, the little hair that can grow on top of your nose, over your ears, asking detailed questions about how much they should trim from my mustache and my Fu Manchu. But it was the most relaxing thing in the entire bloody world. But no, I love onsen. I love public bathing. It took a lot to get used to, especially if you do it with your coworkers, which is a very common thing. First time I went, I was like, oh, I got to try an onsen. And I was traveling at the time with another American guy and a guy from India He's been living in Japan at that point for like 10 years and spoke the language fluently. And they're like, okay, well, let's go. And then I realized, I'm like, am I going to have to see y'all naked? I really don't want to do that. Yeah. And they're like, yeah, that's part of the thing. And so the first few times I ever went, you know, you can get a small little washcloth for your face. That went nowhere near my face. That was covering my junk the entire time. I had a death grip on that thing like you would not believe. And now, like, there's a where we normally stay, which is where my wife's parents are, there's a really nice onsen called Ofuro no Osama, or the Bath of the King. And it's beautiful, but I am so used to going there now, and I haven't clutched a washcloth to my junk in quite some time. In fact, I'm very used to older men walking up to me. I'm stark naked, they're stark naked, and they'll reach over and they're pet my stomach and go, okay, that's nah. Now, you're fat, aren't you? And I went, yeah, I am. So how you doing?
and then they put their leg up on the bench and then tell you their life story. Yeah.
No, it's not nearly as bad as like American gyms are. Oh my God. These people have no shame. No, they're still very tasteful in what they do. But, oh, and the other thing too, in case you haven't ever ran into this, female staff members walk around the changing rooms.
Yes.
Constantly. Yep. Cleaning. And I have been in there just drying off, naked as the day I was born. And I'm not trying to put images in your head, I swear to God. And an attractive young woman just walks by, just mopping up the floor. And that was the only time I've ever wanted to clutch something to my privates again, because I'm like, nope,
Schwing. So I did go to a more public bathroom, the soaking tub and stuff, when we stayed in Kyoto. I only went up there a couple times, and I'm just walking around naked, just trying to get dressed. And I'm like, okay, interesting. My wife might not like to hear this story, but we won't tell her. But here, I apologize to the listeners, but I got to show you guys real quick the private onsen we had that I literally lived in while I was in the room. Anyway, like we had the best thing about it was you could open the sliding doors and it was like kind of cooler outside. So you wake up in the morning, you get into the bath and you open up, or you open the doors, get in the bath, and you could feel the cold air like hitting you as you're sitting in the hot bath. Like, I haven't relaxed like that in so long. I needed that.
Oh, that is my absolute favorite part, because in onsen, so what you do first is that you have these little footstools that you actually sit down on, and you wash your body entirely first. And you do this whether you're at home, you're in onsen, doesn't matter. You wash your body completely, because everyone shares the same bath water, whether it's a family or if you're in public, you're sharing it with everybody, and you don't really want to think about that too much. And then after you're done with that, most facilities will have two different types of bathing that you can do. The first are like indoor baths, but then the one that I go to, they have a huge open air onsen. And that's where I go. I make a beeline for that thing. And especially because I only go when it's cold outside. Yeah. And, you know, you hit the freezing air. You're completely nude. You walk into the water, which is, you know, 40 degrees Celsius normally. And you just sit there and just melt.
Yeah.
Oh, God. But then, you know, and then after you're done, you're too burned up. You get out. I sit on these stone steps. Our stone stools outside, let the cold air cool you off. And then when you're ready again, you either go back in, or then they have these full-sized beds, which are just made of stone, that have a thin layer of hot onsen water flowing over them. Mm. And you lay down on it and you just relax a little bit. Oh, it's the best thing in the world. And you just rinse and repeat all day long. Yeah. It's amazing.
Hot. It's called a hot cold therapy, right? I've done that before. I love that. It's so good for you.
Oh, they actually have entire like hot water baths and then cold water baths. Yeah. And some psychos out there, they'll sit there and like dip in 40 degree water, and then they're going to ice cold water and rinse and repeat. I'm like, no, I'll just sit in the open air. That's more than enough for me right there.
I'm sorry to say I'm the psycho, man. I did that. And I can't do it for very long. I can only do it a couple times till I'm really uncomfortable. But like, man, after I'm done, I sleep really well. Like it's
I can imagine.
Therapeutic.
So JJ, why don't you share with us some of the creepiest Japanese spirits and demons that you know of?
The one that comes to mind is actually played a bit of historical relevance. So there was a major general who was beheaded, and then his head, he went somewhere else, he fought in a war, he was betrayed and beheaded, and then they say that he was so angry that the spirit of his head flew back to Tokyo and was causing a rampage until a group of monks set up a memorial to him in order to appease his spirit. And this is still, and this memorial is located in what has to be the most expensive bit of real estate in all of Tokyo. And in the 1945, 1950, after the Second World War, the Japanese government, together with the U.S., decided to try to relocate this shrine. And it's a very, very small shrine, but it takes up a huge amount of area. They decided to relocate it. And every single time they tried, catastrophes would happen. Entire bulldozers would flip over. People were crushed to death. And after like the third time, both governments said, nope, we are out. We're not doing this shit anymore. And so that thing still resides in the most expensive piece of real estate in all of Japan. And they're too afraid to touch it.
Where is this, like, specifically?
It's in Tokyo.
Is it like deep, like in the heart of Tokyo, or is it like in the outskirts?
No, it's in the heart of Tokyo. I'll have to look up exactly where. I don't quite remember. There's an anime out right now, and I just did a mini episode all about it, and it's called Darku Gatheringo, or Dark Gathering. And it starts off as a very like Shonen Jump kind of anime. There's a little girl who dresses in like these pointy shark shoes and has skulls for pupils, very, very stylish. And you think it's just going to be kind of stupid as I watch the first episode. But no, it has gotten dark. People have died. They've lured spirits to be eaten by other spirits in perpetuity. In the latest episode, there was a ghost that would curse any women to give birth to a giant monster or a giant baby that had a huge head. And that was caused because of incest. It gets really bloody dark. And it's just, I am there for it. It is awesome. Not the incest. Not
the canceled.
Just the whole vibe is amazing.
The reason why I'm going to bring this up is because like the darkness of some Japanese parts of culture are very obvious when you start delving into it. But like on the plane ride over, I decided like, okay, maybe, you know, I'll be the responsible parent since I'm traveling with a kid. And like, let's see what's in the news in Japan. So I turned on the Japanese news. I think it was like NHK or something on the plane. And I had the little translation or the subtitles. And I was like watching the news. And the first thing that popped up in this, like the first story that popped up was like about some murder that was committed by some monk or something in some shrine in Tokyo. And he ended up killing, or no, sorry. It was some guys set up a trap for a monk in a Tokyo shrine. And they like basically put these canisters in some kind of burn area for cremation or something underneath the shrine. And then the guy went down there to inspect it, and it turns out like it was filled with noxious gas or gasoline or something. And the guy ended up like dying from suffocation. And then I'm like thinking, like, what a dark ass story. Like, just a couple dudes who like probably wanted the, I think they wanted the property or something. I'm like, shit, man. Like what a terrible thing to do. Like, you know, try to off somebody to get their property or what, like rights to something. You don't think about it till you get there, but like, and then somebody else threw a bag of noxious gas, which, you know, like, I don't know if I'm sure, you know, JJ, but like Amish and Rikyo, the cult from the 90s or whatever, like they killed a bunch of people on a plane because they put, or I mean, a train, because they put these chemicals in bags and threw them onto trains, and like people suffocated and died from them. But somebody had just done that again on our way there. Like they did it in a, one of the bullet trains or something. And I'm like thinking in my mind, like, oh great, we're going to be riding these trains. Another thing to worry about. But just to tie it all back, like it makes sense why there's so many terrible stories about demons and like possessions and stuff, because that shit goes on everywhere, including Japan.
Oh yeah, it's there's some really heartbreaking stories, and one of the most common ones that you'll find nowadays are NEETs, which NEET, which stands for not in employment, education, or training. So these are people that either they're hikikomoris, meaning that they're too afraid to go outside, or they're just wanting to live off from their parents' wages. They'll live with their very elderly parents, mooch off from them, and then wind up murdering them and then pretending like they're still alive so they can collect their government benefits. Ugh. And just stay on like that. You hear about that at least once a week. It's awful. It really is.
Makes you wonder if because of that, we'll get some new vengeful spirit stories.
I would not doubt it, but there are so many already. Goodness gracious. Some other monsters I really like. Have y'all heard of Tengu?
Oh yeah, the Tengu. Yep.
Yeah, even people in the U.S. know about them, but they're typically depicted as having extremely long Pinocchio-like noses that are turned up slightly. They're normally depicted by a red mask with a huge nose on it, but they are winged and normally have bird's feet in addition to the wings. But they are the ultimate tricksters. And they can be absolutely malicious and malevolent, but normally they're just treated as kind of kindly trickster kami that reside around. And then, of course, you've got your oni, which are kind of a mixture of an ogre and a demon. And, you know, there's a famous childhood tale of a red ogre and a blue ogre, and I won't bore you with the details, but everyone in Japan knows the Aoni and Akaoni story, and they're normally reenacted as children's plays.
That's so fascinating. I think we did talk about that in the past. That's actually one of my favorite stories, too. It is interesting that they have such a wide variety of good and bad, whereas I feel like in Western cultures, when you talk about spirits or whatever, like it's almost always negative, unless you talk about very personalized experiences, like someone's loved one died and then their favorite bird like showed up on the windowsill the next day after their death. And, like, you know, beautiful stories like that. But like if you're talking about societal, collectivistic, like group stories, Japan has such a wide range of them, good and bad, and even in the middle. Like Tengu, sometimes they're benevolent, sometimes they help you, but other times they'll like trick you into going under a sign that crushes your body or something crazy like that. And I just have to wonder, like, what, like, that's such an interesting influence on a culture that they're basically on a giant island. Essentially, I guess, you know, in the modern age of instant travel and communication, or near instant travel communication, stuff like that, it becomes more diluted over time, but it still seems interestingly specific and unique to Japan, all these stories.
Oh, they are. And it's amazing. You've got a country that has existed for hundreds and hundreds of years, for a lot of that time in isolation, founded by the Chinese, which have now morphed into the Japanese. So they carry all of that thousands of years of tradition right alongside them.
Don't say that too loud. They're going to get mad at you.
Yeah, I know. There is such hatred between so many different factions in the Japanese. It's and a lot of it's kind of deserved. I'm not going to come to their defense because, dear Lord, Imperial War Machine Japan was
on another level. They committed
their own atrocities left, right, and center, and there is no. In fact, that's why you only find the far right being the people that are rah-rah Japan. Like, they're actually political. They want to be political. Otherwise, the vast majority of the country, they actually abhor anything patriotic. They will not participate in that. It's become the exact opposite of wartime Japan, which is a good thing, in my opinion. But that is neither here nor there. I forgot what the hell. But then you're in a country which was populated with tons of very remote villages that were cut off from everyone else. And you had all of these stories, and you had a country that was steeped in Buddhist and Shinto religion, and demons and monsters arose everywhere. And you're in a spot where this stuff could just flourish for, you know, hundreds of years. So you're going to get some really interesting tales, and Japan most certainly did not disappoint in that regard at all.
Yeah, I know we're a little pressed for time, JJ. I know you said you had a hard stop today. There's a few things I wanted to ask you before we wrap up for today. So
no.
All right, that's today's show, folks.
And also real quick, before we get off, I have to bring up my crazy experience, or crazy story one, like really quickly, and get JJ's perspective. But Chris, you go first.
We could save that for the end if you don't mind.
Yeah.
We could finish off with that. Okay. So JJ, regarding vengeful spirits, I know Dean and I, we did a podcast where we talked about the Kuche Sakeona, the slit mouth woman. What are some of the other common vengeful spirits that you've heard of?
There's a lot. So there, in addition to Kuche Sakeona, which is still one of my absolute favorite stories. Have y'all seen the horror movies that depict her?
No, I haven't yet.
No. Oh, I've got to send y'all images, just the still images themselves. It came out in the 90s, and there's an entire trilogy of the things that they are. They are like the ultimate B-real movies ever made, but they are awesome, though. I love those things. There's a lot of stories of women seeking revenge. In fact, that's what Kuche Sakeona is really all about. And she is not the ultimate template, but she is a template that so many other stories depend upon and emulate. So if a woman was raped, if her husband cheated on her and then tried to kill her, then she'll come back and do other things. But then you also get the more forlorn stories. You'll get a lot of bakemono, like Yuki Onna, the snow women, where they pretend to be human women. They'll meet a man and they get married, things are going fine, but then one day the husband discovers her secret. So she's a snow woman. This woman never eats in front of her husband. And then one day he walks in and she has a mouth in the back of her head, and she's just shoving food into that mouth. A woman has a giant snake for a neck, and her head just kind of spins all the way around. That is one of the most common kind of tales that you will see, especially around vengeful women spirit. And then, of course, there's the story I told about the general that was murdered when he actually tried to betray the emperor of Japan and take over, and he was kind of condemned. And now he is a restless spirit in which no one can contain, because if you do, then he will bring ruin onto the entire country. But there's one other story, and it's of a young girl. I think in the story she's 13, 14, something like that. And she is out and about, and she gets a beautiful red kimono. And while she is out shopping, she meets another young man and she falls hopelessly in love. And this young man then gets betrothed to somebody else. And she is so lovesick that she can't get out of bed. She refuses to eat, and then she dies. And this kimono that she refused to take off because she loved it so much and it reminded her of him. When the family tried to sell it, it would keep causing fires wherever it went until there was the major fire. I don't know if it was Tokyo itself or if Edo, that claimed thousands and thousands of lives. And they say that it's because of this red cursed kimono. And that's a very common trait that you'll find. Have you ever seen it's kind of like Japan's version of the Twilight Zone, but it was made late 90s or so. And the English title, which is awful, is Tokyo Tales of Terror. If you haven't, I highly urge you to watch them. You can find most of them on YouTube. One of my favorite one is Shadows Sitting on Their Feet. Oh, God, they have some absolutely, like, really kind of terrifying tales. But a lot of these stories will involve a person finding a random object on the street, a red ring or a music box, and then they take it home. And then instantly they are cursed. So in the West, you'll get a lot of these, you know, oh, it's a ghost. I'm being haunted. Oh, woe is me. Oh, it's terrifying. No, in a lot of Asian cultures, if you're cursed, and there are two types of curses, there's noroi, which are human-based curses, and then there is tachiyari, which are divine curses. They are the perversion of the divine. Then you are dead, or you wish that you were dead. And there is no gray area. It's, yeah, and I love that
story. So essentially, just because of that. Folks, if you're in Japan and you run into some sort of red item, don't pick it up. Just leave it alone. And there was one last thing I wanted to ask you, JJ. What do you know about Okigahara?
I have been there.
No.
Okigahara is a Juken, a suicide forest that is at the base of Mount Fuji. It is a 32-kilometer wide forest, and legend says that it was a place where if villages were strapped for food, they would take the elderly and the infirm, march them into the forest, and leave them to die. However, nowadays, it's become a juken, which is a place where when people want to die, they will march into the forest, and they will either off themselves right then and there, or they will bring camping gear and hang out until they get the nerve to off themselves. And there's a lot of signs all over the place which are, you know, trying to proclaim, your life is valuable. Please don't do this. In fact, they used to do like weekly or biweekly walks throughout the forest. But in recent years, that has become more of like a once every 6 month kind of rotation. And then if they find a body, they'll then take it back to the nearest village and cold store it and try to have a funeral arrangements for it, etc. But when I went there, and I've heard about this place forever, you know, it's the second most popular suicide spot in the world next to the Golden Gate Bridge. And I wanted to see this place for myself. I had to. So I convinced a group of coworkers to go with me. And it was like a 3-4 hour car ride from Tokyo to Okigahara. And we get there and we do a couple of touristy things. And then we park in a small little parking lot and we walk into the forest. Now, the ground where the forest is volcanic glass. You know, so people say that compasses don't work in there. I don't know if they don't. I've heard that's more legend than anything, but who knows? What I do know is that the trees are so ancient and so massive that the moment you step past the tree line, you hear nothing. Even though the road is 500 meters away from you, it sounds like you are in the most remote spot in the entire world. And the moment after we stepped past that tree line, I swore I would hear a sound. It was like a constantly repeating, very low. Nobody else heard this but me. And I would keep asking, I'm like, do you hear this? And they're like, no, shut up. So we walked about 15 minutes into the woods. We took a few photos. And the longer I stayed there, the more petrified I became, to the point where I said, guys, we have got to get the F out of here. I can't take it. It's killing me. And so we do. We finally leave. And then we stay in the creepiest of all ryokans that I have ever been to in my life that night. And then we go to Fujikyu Highland the next day, which is a Yurenji, an amusement park. And I almost die there because of, you know, they're not built to hold bigger guys like me. But that's the story for another time. The forest was calling to
you. Glad you got out of there.
I don't know what it was doing, but I will tell you this, yeah, though. I will not visit again. That's how bad it unnerved me. And I've been around a lot of creepy things in my life. I normally am drawn to them. No, this was so far out of my realm of comfort I was done.
By the way, what a perfect place, like what a great place, not great place, what a spot on place for someone to commit a murder. I just think like in Brooklyn or something like that, like, you know, they have the mob has places where they go off people or whatever. They'll like never find their bodies, like construction site. But like, what if you like wanted to, if the Yakuza wanted to kill someone, just take them to the forest and like give them a wound that looks like it was self-inflicted and no one's going to ask any questions. Like that's just that's
actually a pretty common trope that you'll see, especially amongst the like TV shows that depict the Yakuza. They say, oh, just take them up into the mountains and bury them. No one's ever going to find them. It's their equivalent of sleeping with the fishes with concrete shoes.
Creepy. But one thing I wanted to say too, before we break off into the last story is, JJ, we talked about this, on the first podcast, I think we did with you like a month or so ago. And I was walking around Kobe. Actually, this happened a couple times. I think it happened in Tokyo as well. But there was like some little trinket on the ground. I'm pretty sure it was red. But it looked new. And it looked like some kid had just dropped it. And I bent over to pick it up. And right before I grabbed it with my hand, I'm like, I remembered what you said. And I pulled away from it. And I was like, almost got me. Almost got me. And I walked past it. And my wife looked at me like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I'm like, I'll tell you later. And so you might have saved, dude, you might have saved me. I don't know, man. And then in Tokyo. Oh man, it's just crazy.
Were they shaped like a rectangle? Like a rectangle.
I think it might have been a little keychain that was shaped like a rectangle, like a little tag talisman looking thing.
Yeah. So those are omori. They're actually protective talismans.
Oh, I could have had protection. Okay.
No, because you don't know what kind you get. Okay. And you never know. You did the right thing. You should absolutely do not touch them, especially if they're red. Just
he would have picked it up and woke up with a cup that of way.
I shall
send with him. Like, hey, buddy.
This,
you got some cucumbers?
I don't know if I would have minded that. Okay, I could say a dirty joke, but I'm not going to say it.
I love cootie with your cucumber.
The whitest cucumber you've ever seen. Okay, gross.
No, that's staying. That's staying.
But this is the perfect
night just from
you
that,
will, man. It's that's what my wife says. So, like, you know. Anyway, last story I want to bring up, because this is actually this really legit happened to me, and it is creepy as hell, especially since Chris did some special research for me. I just didn't do this type of research or like spill it out this way, but here's what happened. So on the Kyoto leg of the trip, we stayed in a relatively new hotel. It was decent. It was a decent hotel, but it wasn't old. It wasn't like, you know, it shouldn't have been haunted in any such way. But right before that leg of the trip, we were in Kobe. And like I said, we had gone up to the mountain up there, went to the old shrine. I got some weird vibes up there, went, stayed in the really old onsen, et cetera, et cetera. Walked past the talisman on the ground, which, by the way, quickly, this is really shitty, but I think I accidentally killed a praying mantis. I think I might have, I don't know if it was already dead, like someone stepped on it, but I might have crushed it with my daughter's stroller. I don't know. So that could be extra bad luck. We were in the Kyoto hotel. And like, you know, half the nights I was there, I couldn't sleep very well, but I had woken up pretty like seamlessly into around like midnight, maybe 1 a.m. And I was like half asleep, like laying there, just looking around the dark room. And I start drifting off again. And all of a sudden I hear someone or something intently whisper what sounded like, "Ario." As soon as I heard that, about like maybe a second later, I thought of you, JJ. I'm like, that story you told me about walking past the graveyard. And I'm like, oh, God damn it. And then I immediately get out my phone and put my the blanket over my head so I don't wake my family up. And I'm like texting, like, what does Ario mean? Is Ario a Japanese word? And I search A-R-Y-O and I couldn't find anything. Okay, so my explanation as a trying to be a semi-rational person was, we taught my daughter how to say arigato. And she was saying arigato to a lot of people. It was really cute. And I'm thinking like, maybe my daughter in her sleep, like tried to say that. And she just, instead of coming out as arigato, it came out as Ario. Or maybe my wife, you know, said something in her sleep and it just sounded like that. But I was so out of it that I didn't know what it came from.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Could it have been Ario?
Say it again.
Ario.
Ario. It could have been. It could have been. What does that mean? Please don't tell me Satan.
So, no. Are is, it's here. And yo is a ending, which means you're educating somebody. So it could literally mean it's here.
It's here?
It's here. Yep.
Okay. Creepy. Well, Chris did a quick search of Ario, and it comes up as a name that is used, and I can't describe the kanji off the top of my head, but the first meaning is to exist or to preserve, and then the second character is one of the definitions is to replace or substitute. And I thought it would be creepy if like it literally meant to replace the existence of something, but it also seems like it's a pretty benign name. But I like yours better, JJ. Yours is definitely creepier. It's here now. But
yeah, because ade, it does mean it is a verb to be. But if you go, you know, ade, you know, is it? And if you say it without context, and it could mean, you know, it is here. And then if I'm informing you of something, then I would say the ending particle of yo. Which means that you don't know it, but I do, and I'm telling you about it.
Interesting. So, okay, so if that was a legit experience, you could maybe take that as like a helpful spirit warning me that there's another spirit there or something is there, or could it be like more benign, like, oh, it's time for something or something has arrived, or you know what I mean? Like the fulfillment of a wish?
No,
or
it would be creepy. It would be okay. A very creepy kind of thing if something was telling you it's here. Not a good thing.
let's just hope that the 1,000-mile plane ride or whatever has separated me from whatever it was. But watch, you know, I brought it back in my camera. We'll see. Nothing's happened creepy since we've been back. But
and before we wrap up, we'll see. Dude, you remember when we were talking about maybe one day you'd have an experience? Maybe one day? Maybe that was it. Maybe that was your awakening. Before we end today, I want to thank JJ for being on the show again. Dude, we love having you on. And out of all people, my mom was like, you need to have JJ on again. So here we are. So on my mother's request, you are here once again. And obviously, because we wanted you here to discuss this topic today. But again,
well, if those who don't know, Chris and I have become like ultimate TikTok friends. We trade videos back and forth all day long with each other. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's a fun time. But JJ, thanks once again for being on today's show. Folks, if you don't know where to find him, he is the host of the Southern Demonology podcast. You could find that on all podcast platforms. And he also has an Instagram and a TikTok page. So please go ahead and give him a follow. He's an awesome guy and his show is amazing. I absolutely love his content.
Yeah, two things. So you can also find us on our website, which is southerndemonology.com. And I'm also one of four hosts on the Paranormal Rundown, which we have over 1,600 different paranormal topics. And we have a random number generator decide who's going to answer it. And it's done by the guy who does the Trailer Trash Terrors podcast, a paranormal investigator, and myself, and then Father Mike Birdsong, who is an exorcist who lives in Georgia.
And with that, folks, we hope you enjoyed today's episode. Thanks for tuning into today's episode of The Wandering Road. You can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, and most podcast platforms. Be sure to subscribe and share. Also, don't forget to give a follow on Instagram at TW Road Podcast and follow my TikTok at TWR Podcast. Take care, and I'll catch you on the next one.